we present the news quiz with your host, Miles Jupp.
And welcome to the news quiz. We start with a cutting from a Land's End mail shot, read by Susan Ray.
It's National Swimsuit Day. Take 50% off.
Our thanks to Francis Catamole for sending that in. Now let's meet the teams. Will you welcome first on my right, Frankie Boyle and Helen Lewis. And opposite them on my left, Jen Brister and Mark Steele. Frankie, why has the end of May come early?
This refers to the collapse of Theresa May and the collapse possibly of the government and possibly of British society in general, which I'm actually quite excited about. I'd quite like to see what happens when British society collapses. I'd like to see what life is like without antibiotics. Oh, I've bitten my tongue. Goodbye. She's now got all the authority of the do not tumble dry label. I mean, she always had the charm of a war crime, but now her body language is gone. I didn't realise it was possible to limp with both legs. So basically, she's trying to bring her deal back. She'll just never stop bringing this deal back. Oh, look, I've changed the font. Some clip art of a family having a picnic. And I'm actually looking forward to her going, for her sake, I mean, how much better would it be? I mean, she's going to feel a relief when she goes. Her and Philip May will probably take a cruise. You know, within a week, she'll be like on the top deck of a cruise. Philip will be holding her out over the railings like Leonardo DiCaprio. And she'll just smile up at Philip and go, Philip, drop me.
It's a lovely picture you paint. Is this the way you think it's going as well, Helen? Is it about to end badly or well for her?
Well, the thing
I mean,
is,
it's certainly ending, but how will it end?
I don't know what well would look like at this point. She sort of reminds me of Rasputin. She's just so unbelievably resilient. Like, she's basically sitting there going, can't make me. You know, because she's been so unbelievable. She's just taken all these blows and been so weirdly dignified about it. She must have a huge pent-up sort of Donald Trump-style tweet storm inside her somewhere. Wouldn't it be magnificent to see her go out like that?
She'd be like sort of Betty Draper in Mad Men, standing out there with a fag on and sort of holding a sawn-off shotgun.
I mean, I find myself thinking, oh, for God's sake, Thatcher was evil, but at least she was competent. Because up until a few weeks ago, I think that quite a few people were still thinking, well, I don't agree with her, but it's a difficult job and she's sticking with it, so, well, you've got to admire her. But I don't think anyone's been thinking that the last couple of weeks. I think everyone now knows that she's like one of these hugely annoying people that you'll meet sometimes, and no matter how many people go, just go away, she'll go, all right, well, I've understood what you've said and that's why I'm going to stay here a bit longer. No, get out! Everybody hates you! Go away! Sod off! Just get out forever! Well, I've certainly listened to what you've said. I think she will carry on with this deal forever. She will, 20 years after she's had to leave, she'll just be walking around the streets, going up to the homeless, going, will you agree with my deal?
What I found was really interesting was Ian Duncan Smith's response to her not leaving was to speak to her husband. Well, I think we should bloody well speak to her husband and maybe he could have a word with her. Philip, have a word with the old dear, will you? Tell her to bugger off. We've had enough of the old bat.
But I agree with you. I really thought that Ian Duncan Smith comment really got on my nerves, because it was a bit like, you're Prime Minister and you're still not treated as the head of your own household.
It is literally the most obnoxious thing I have ever read, and I've read Russell Brand's autobiography.
Just to think about getting advice about being leader of the Tory party from Ian Duncan Smith.
Yeah, I know, of all people. Wind your neck in, mate.
So do you think he already has.
Do you think in all of this, and Andrea Leadsom, do you think she's had a good week? I mean, I doubt it's been easy for her, but she's done something sort of decisive, maybe, that's game-changing.
I'd love to read her resignation letter. I bet it started with, as a mother.
I mean, I think the sort of Labour have done really well, though, because...
Mark, I was very brave of you to start that sentence, I think that, Mark, but you I can rest now if you like.
Makes my point. I think they've done really well. Honestly, I think I'm gonna make a case here for Labour's policy because I think it chimes in with the country. I think it's really good because Labour's policy on Europe is complicated, isn't it? Bloody hell.
This is the resignation of Theresa May. Once Theresa May has stepped down from party leadership, she will still technically be the Prime Minister and we'll be in a bit of a Schrodinger's PM situation where we both have and do not have a Prime Minister. Although, actually, it's felt like that for ages. Of course, once she's out of Downing Street, she can get on with the job of writing her memoirs, each paragraph ending, "And then I tabled the withdrawal agreement again." The Daily Mail ran a roundup of all the potential leadership candidates, stating that Andrea Leadsom has 3 children, but failing to mention how many any of the other candidates have, although, in fairness, no one is quite sure about Boris. Jeremy Corbyn said he looks forward to May's departure as a great opportunity to make very little impact opposite a completely new person altogether. But let's try and remember her fairly, as someone with an undoubtedly tough job who tried her very best, and failed absolutely miserably. 2 points to Frankie. Helen, who's shaken up the EU elections?
This must be Nigel Farage, who now, wherever he goes, people threaten to douse him in dairy products. The campaign, I believe, is called Lactose Against Intolerance. And I'm really torn on this because every fibre in my being is against this as something that entering kind of our political discourse, but it is also very, very funny. And that is a real dilemma. I mean, I don't know where anyone else has landed on this, but my worry about it is that basically it feeds into his narrative of being extremely oppressed and also of the fact that I find his opinions incredibly offensive, but I'm sure he finds my opinions very offensive, and I don't really like milkshakes. And I don't want to be covered in them. Someone actually threatened to milkshake me this morning for an article I've written about feminism, and I had to say, it prompted a long thought about what liquid I'd like to be doused in.
Was your top 5?
Well, I've gone with a G&T. Because I think if I kept my mouth open, that could actually be a real win.
So, obviously, we're in a slightly odd situation as well with the EU elections, because there's a very complicated law that the producer explained at length about what we can and can't talk about, none of which I really... Look, anyway, it's pretty complicated. We're not allowed
Someone
to mention...
Someone is going
to
win it.
Someone's going to win it.
That, other people.
I think that's one of the things we can't talk about.
Right. No, everyone's a winner. Democracy's the winner.
Democracy has had a great couple of years.
If Farage is back, I thought at least the result of Brexit meant that at least we got rid of Farage. It's like watching a suicide bomber doing a comeback tour. We've now got to get involved. I just don't feel I know these people. Who are these people? These angry, white, middle-aged men who are obsessed with Europe not taking decisions for them. These are people whose wives buy their socks. It's almost... I don't find it particularly funny. Like, if it was smaller, I think it'd be funny. If you went... and it looked like you were going to throw a milkshake over him, and it was just lots of little bits of paper that you'd written milkshake on.
It's extraordinary the sort of things he says that suggest that he's not... When he said, you know, I was on a train and there were 3 people in my carriage and they were all speaking foreign languages, and I have to say that did make me feel rather uncomfortable.
He must feel like that in his own kitchen, doesn't he?
And yet an indeterminate number of people apparently may or may not vote for him. Or her.
I think my favourite thing about the whole thing is last year Nigel Farage posed with one of the posters for that film Dunkirk, right? And he was like, yeah, this is the kind of spirit that we need. Because he seems to mysteriously believe that he fought the Second World War. But I just think, and then it going from man, you know, Dunkirk to he won't leave a bus because people are, quotes, armed with milkshakes. Which I think probably what happened at Dunkirk, actually. I think that's how it went. Baffling.
That's right, he would refuse to get off the bus.
He eventually got off a little bit and walked around the bus. But then they had some men who had some lattes who got questioned by the police.
Couldn't he just wear a lot more layers and gradually strip off a on his way through a town.
Go on.
I've actually disgusted myself. Horrendous idea.
Or he could just wear a sort of... He could just appear only ever wearing sort of wipeable clothes, which should be quite some sort of rubber suit.
Let's laminate him.
This is the final week of campaigning for the European election, which involved milkshake being thrown at Nigel Farage. The milkshake was from Five Guys, which is a burger chain and not a way of describing the Liberal Democrats. Following the milkshake attack, Farage has said for his own safety he will no longer walk anywhere and must be carried at all times on a papoose strapped to Anne Widdecombe. 2 points to Helen. Jen, who's testing the government's mettle?
British Steel has collapsed, and this is a big deal in the face of Brexit. We as a nation have lost our steel, our resolve, our mettle. The impact that it's going to have on so many people is huge, and I think it's a responsibility that the government have to nationalise it, really, is what we should be doing, and to help save these people's jobs. I think it'd be really...
Do you think we should also, though, nationalise Jamie's Italian?
People all the time kind of go, oh, you new journalist, you ivory tower, you don't understand business. I feel like I could have predicted that charging people £16.50 for some tomatoes on a plank was not a sustainable business model.
On a plank? Mine were on a bin lid. I'm livid. What's going on?
And those menus were a hate crime.
Get Gordon Ramsay in there to sort out. It's really sad for those workers, isn't it, to think that your company, right, so your livelihood is sold to a private equity firm for £1. The company before that bought it for £2 and they were called Tata. I mean, that doesn't inspire confidence. Oh, we've been bought by So Long Suckers for £3.25.
This is Britain, though, isn't it, the last 40 years. If it's not making money, it doesn't matter if people are going to lose their jobs and everyone's going to be poor, it doesn't matter because everything's going to make money. What's that library doing? They're not making anybody money, so shut it down. Every little thing like that. Oh, yeah, I don't... Why should I pay for things communally? Why should I pay for a school? If I'm paying for a school out of my taxes, I should be allowed to use their fuzzy felt. Why should I be... Why should I pay for a fire brigade? I'm not on fire. You pay for it if you want to be carried over someone's shoulder down the alleyway. It's nothing to do with me.
But there are lots of reasons, aren't there, that a country wants to have a steel industry that, you know, even if it's not profitable, right, for reasons of, like, security or, like, most of our railway lines...
Well, all of them.
With British steel. You know, trains are made with British steel. We're going to reach Britain's natural conclusion, which is we'll import steel from China and British people will become racist against trains. And getting a UKIP onto a train will be like getting a cat into a travel box.
This is the news that British Steel has collapsed into insolvency following the failure of rescue talks with the government. Now Theresa May can add 5,000 angry steelworkers to the list of people who no longer like her, which now includes Remainers, Leavers, the Labour Party, the Conservative Party, the European Union, and that one grumpy wheat farmer. For many in Scunthorpe, the prospect of losing their jobs is made all the worse by the inevitability of having to become an extra in the resulting heartwarming comedy starring Jim Broadbent and Julie Walters, regaining their dignity by starting a body-popping troupe with friends from the job centre against the backdrop of regional economic decline, which will later go on to be described as life-affirming by the film reviewer from Classic FM. I will almost certainly audition for it. The government said it would leave no stone unturned in its support for the steel industry, which in my book is absolute madness. They should know that stones are the mortal enemy of steel and can only be defeated by paper in a best of three scenario. Also this week, Jamie Oliver's chain of Italian restaurants, Jamie's Italian, has gone into administration. Jamie Oliver said he launched Jamie's Italian in 2008 with the aim of positively disrupting the UK restaurant industry, much like a pigeon might positively disrupt a dinner party by getting in the kitchen, flailing about a bit before crawling into the aga and dying. momentarily distracting everyone from Sarah and Andy's obviously impending divorce. I wish Jamie all the best, but really, who can expect to run a successful Italian restaurant in a world that already includes the unimprovable Bella Italia? The warm welcome of a traditional Roman trattoria, the ambience of Tuscany, all within spitting distance of her boots. 2 points to Jen. And at the end of round one, the scores are Jen and Mark have 4, but Frankie and Helen have 5. We start round two with a cutting from The Guardian.
Officers originally thought the victim had died of natural causes because of recent keyhole surgery to his chest, but it later emerged he'd been shot 6 times at close range.
Our thanks to Richard Mansell for sending us that little ray of sunshine. Mark, who's put the UN into unhappy?
Right, I suspect this is Amber Rudd. This is unusual because this is something to do with the government that has gone wrong. So the UN, which must have a sort of poverty department, I guess, they've did a report about poverty in Britain, and the government then, I think particularly Amber Rudd, got very angry. She said that she was disappointed, but she wasn't disappointed with the fact that Britain has all this poverty. She was disappointed with the fact that the UN report said there was poverty. She said that they were biased. She said that they're biased, and that's, you know, and it's a fair point because the UN are clearly biased against poverty, and there should clearly also be a report that's sort of largely in favour of it, I guess. How dare the UN say that people become poorer just because we take their money off them, when any economist and mathematician knows that if you get someone who's poor and you take money off them, then that makes them rich. That's the trouble, all these people on benefits, they're the ones who've been bloody creating all the problem, innit? Because that's why the austerity programme, well, that's what it was all about. It was about saying, well, you know, we've got to take money back from the people who've been taking it all and who've got it all. And who's got it? The poor, that's who's got it. Look at them in their sleeping bags full of gold. And it's Amber Rudd, who's, I went to Hastings a little while ago. It's a very poor place, a very friendly, lovely place, but it's a very poor place, a lot of drug addiction, a lot of alcoholism. And so she can't really have spotted that there's no poverty, you wouldn't think. But Hastings is very quaint because people sometimes go down from London because it's cheaper. If they're struggling a bit in London, they move down to Hastings. And there's a quaint little word that Hastings people have for London people who do that, which is filth, which is quite it's quite sweet because it stands for failed in London, try Hastings. And they've all got everything there's named after 1066, so they quite get, oh, there's a 1066 jazz club and things like that, and there's a building firm called William the Concreter. So...
is it called the White Rock Theatre in...
Yes. Yeah, the White Rock
and Theatre. And that's got 1,066 seats.
Yes, it has, yeah, everything. Yes. There's a 1066 Vets there, where I think they say, I'm afraid there's nothing we can do for Mr. Tibbles.
I love banter names of shops. You know the Liverpool One shopping centre in Liverpool? They've got an Everton shop in it that's called Everton 2. So its address is Everton 2, Liverpool 1. That's brilliant. But this report, so this is Philip Alston, the UN Rapporteur for Poverty. And
what's his title? Sorry,
UN Rapporteur.
That is a very cool name.
I think, yeah, like half raconteur, half rapper. That's how I imagine he sees himself. But this is his second report, and it's very much the Sex and the City 2 of UN reports, and then it's much, much worse than the first one. He says it's weird living... It's not set in Dubai. That's good. But yeah, it says we're living in a sort of Dickensian workhouse model.
Didn't he quoted Thomas Hobbes? He said the lives of British poor people are nasty, brutish and short, which is also the names of the three dwarves that Snow White could only talk about in therapy. Short was a particularly tautological name for a dwarf. It was a very bland character. They just went with that. But I think it was a mistake on his part to reference Dickens and to reference the Victorian era, because Conservative MPs love that time. They fetishise it. They could time travel to the Victorian era and live in it. They would. If there was a place in the basement of Conservative HQ where you could go down and say a time travel spell, you just shout, pull your socks up backwards in Latin. Emerge in 1858, then they would do it. You know, because our class system is what dictates
quite a big
us.
If, isn't it, frankly?
Like, you know, these are we bring these people up with no empathy. We beat the empathy out of them. We send them to public schools. They're alienated. Their personalities, you know, Boris Johnson's personality is a thing he developed to try and lure his father out from behind the Daily Telegraph or something, right? He's brought up in a labyrinth of mahogany panelling that you can only navigate through the sound of a dinner gong. Those are for children to try and find their way back to the family. And this is why they all end up in politics. They're subliminally attached to the noise of Big Ben. They fetish. They hear a bong. Mother! But this is why we end up with these... And our next Prime Minister will be Boris Johnson, a sort of evolutionary dead end of the honey monster.
The other thing that the Tories party responded with was a report, another UN report, that said that Britain was actually one of the happiest places to live. Have you ever met a British person and said to them, well, so what do you think of the UK? Have you ever heard anyone go, it's just amazing?
Yeah. I think that report comes about because probably the people doing the study didn't understand sarcasm.
This is a UN report which compares the welfare policies of the government to the creation of workhouses. The report, written by Special Rapporteur on Extreme Poverty, Professor Philip Alston, has come to the alarming conclusion that if you take away people's money, they will have less money. The government said the report was barely believable. I mean, exactly. I think we all know the public are sick of carefully researched UN reports written by unbiased specialists. Get back to your straight croissants, Professor. 2 points to Mark. Frankie, who aren't seeing eye to eye over human rights?
Is this the facial recognition thing in Wales?
That absolutely is.
A guy in Cardiff, he's suing the police because his image was captured by facial recognition technology, which is technology that's existed for a while. So, like, you can unlock your Apple phone with facial recognition. I think the trick is to set it to your cum face. This is obviously a bad thing, isn't it? I mean, there's a kind of can art about technology where people go, oh, this could be used for good or ill. You always get this with new technology. Who knows what they'll use my mobile execution bits for? I hope it's for good. So this will obviously change people's behaviour, and I, for one, will commit most of my crimes while sucking a lemon.
So this guy, yeah, he's just taken seriously twice, basically. His image has been captured before he'd had a chance to be asked, I suppose, and he's taken them to court. How strong is his case, do you think, Helen?
Well, it's incredibly intrusive. It's more intrusive, really, than fingerprinting, and you have to get consent for that. The thing that really bothers me about this is how bad it is. So they had the Champions League final in 2017. They used it, and 92% of the matches were wrong. I mean, at that point, you might as well just give a relatively decent policeman a set of pictures and he would do better, or she would do better. So that's the thing that I find is this idea that kind of people just look for technological solutions to everything as if it's inevitably going to be much better. Also, it doesn't work as well on women, doesn't work as well on people with darker skin.
So it only recognises white men? Good.
But then that's... We can commit a lot of crimes scot-free, is what I'm saying. So actually, I'm in favour of it. I've changed
or get accused for committing crimes we clearly haven't done.
Have you got a list of crimes that you're... This is the only thing that, you know, this knowledge just gives you the freedom. I mean, what are you going to do?
Pig rustling, embezzling, Grand Theft Auto.
Yeah.
Pinching Anne Widdecombe.
Where?
Hurting her or bundling her into a van.
There's the news. Anne Widdecombe has been stolen.
By the author of a new book. This is the first major legal challenge to the police's use of automated facial recognition surveillance. Ed Bridges, who has taken the case to court, was captured by the system at least twice, including while protesting outside an arms fair in March 2018 and while doing Christmas shopping, presumably not at an arms fair. But remember, it's important to get what they would want, not what you would want. The technology allows the police to capture thousands of facial images a day. The captured images are then compared with images on police watch lists to see if they match. And if they do, they're instantly vaporised by a drone.
No, sorry, that bit is still at the consultation stage, but fingers crossed. I've never had my face captured by a police camera, but I have been caught by the Google Maps van zipping past. So if you want to see a man in a flower bed angrily and hurriedly putting his trousers on... simply pop in South Mim Services northbound in the search bar and get ready to zoom. not a good day. The accuracy of the technology was called into question when Nick Clegg failed to be recognised despite passing the van 43 times, holding his memoirs and shouting, "I am Nick Clegg." Researchers claim that police use of facial recognition technology is operating in a legal vacuum. I'm not sure what a legal vacuum means jurisprudentially, but I did once put a little wig on a Henry Hoover, or Justice Hoover, as he's now known. All rise. 2 points to Frankie. Helen, have a listen to this. I said we're all gonna be just dirt in the ground. We're all gonna be just dirt in the ground. We're all gonna be just dirt in the ground. I said we're all gonna be just dirt in the ground. Well, Helen, dry your eyes and answer me this. Where can you now legally soil yourself?
Everywhere, technically. Anyway, let's not get into that. This must be the story in Washington, D.C., where it is now legal to have yourself composted after death. Or, you know, before death, if you're feeling particularly adventurous or bored by Brexit.
Are you sure it's Washington, D.C.?
No, I'm not, now you've said that. No, I'm not at all.
Well, I'm just giving you a chance to rethink your answer. Because the last time that someone... I don't think anyone's ever not got 2 points on a question. Thing. There's a tiny factual issue there, but I'm going to give you a second chance to say where this is.
This must be America. I won't give away where. One for you to look up yourselves later. Where it is now legal to have yourself composted after death.
That's right, it's America, in Washington State, I think. That's right, yeah.
You never thought you'd get the panto ow over the difference in Washington State and Washington, D.C., did you?
Very tough crowd.
My favourite bit about this is, so they put you in a hexagonal container, which I imagine a bit like those things you're going to get those small Maltesers in at Christmas. So it's something like that. And then they put you in with alfalfa, wood chips and straw, which I'm pretty sure I saw on the menu at Jamie's Italian. And then 30 days later, apparently all that's left is 2 wheelbarrows full of soil, which sounds quite nice, I think.
So where did the wheelbarrows come from? Do you think it's at all gloomy or anything, or do you bang up for this?
Honestly, I went and interviewed somebody, a forensic scientist, a couple of years ago, and she was in the middle of putting not formaldehyde, but a new preserving process into bodies, and they've got these bodies propped up, and they were the happiest people you've ever met. I think when you work around death a lot, you kind of go, well, you know, the worst will happen one day. Until then, hey, Brexit's not so bad. Really puts everything in perspective.
Because my dad, my own father, he's a death scholar, and he's an incredibly smiley man. This story would be absolutely up his alley, I have to say. He'd be very excited.
Does he have communicated plans about what he wants to happen?
Oh, God, we never talk about it at home. What an incredibly macabre thought. I mean, absolutely, pages and stuff. It'd be like a sort of Vegas show. like people dancing on big, you know, pillars of water and stuff. No, very exciting.
But, you know, you come across, I mean, have you ever thought about faking your own death just to see if people would be nice about you?
Well, I mean, it's a high-risk strategy. I think, don't you think? Do you not think? Isn't it easy? If you really want to find out what loads of people think about you really quickly, I would say just publish a book. get on Amazon and scroll down, Helen. It'll be fine. What do you think about this, Jen?
I quite like the idea of it. Quite like the idea of being composted. Is that, I don't know if that... So everyone's bag, literally. I quite like the idea of just being a couple of bags of soil. I think that's probably the only way I'd get on Gardener's Question Time.
Is that the booking you're chasing? Is that what this is, a sort of gateway to?
Wouldn't that be a great thing, that you could donate your soil to Gardener's Question Time and people could win you? And then they take you home and then they put you in your plants and then they come back and tell you how their plants are doing. You know, they'd be like, I'm Jean from London and I'm just to say that I have used Jen Brister soil on all of my flowers. I'll be honest with you, they're struggling. This is a question to the entire panel. Okay, so what's happened here, I think, Jean, is what you're using is Jen Brister is a lesbian soil and it won't work on your penis flytrap.
I don't know what I think about all this, really, because there's a bit of me that thinks, no, I suppose, you know, you should sort of just go, your body is finished once you, that's it, and, you know, but then whenever I hear these people who go, oh, no, I don't mind, just, you know, chop me up and put me in an omelette. You know.
is that something you hear a lot, Mark?
Care, you know, just stick me in a bin liner. You know them people, just chuck me out with the old newspapers and the old tinky, you know, all those
stick
people.
Me in a bin liner and lead me in the garden of one of my enemies. I want to see them I want to see them banged up for this. Yeah. Frankie, I'm sure you very occasionally think about how you'd like to go.
Well, I've left my body to science after it was rejected by necrophilia. I have a thing that's called a Scottish donor card, which basically says, in the event of my death, I want my organs to be put in a jar and used in cautionary school assemblies about lifestyle choices.
People die from falling downstairs at incredible rates. It takes out way more people than terrorism, and yet we don't get these sort of drills about stairs. The silent killer.
Well, oh, yeah, noisy. They should do announcements.
Clunk, 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 clunk. Yeah, sorry.
They should do announcements at the railway stations. If you see stairs, report them straight away. See it, sort it.
If you're not smart enough to make it down the stairs, you're no great loss.
There we are. I can see no holes in that argument. This is the US state of Washington, which has legalized human composting. The technique was first discovered by Alan Titchmarsh, who had enough of the rigmarole of disposing of the bodies of rival gardeners come romantic novelists by feeding them to pigs. One person taking up the opportunity said, I'd like a tree to be grown on me so I can provide oxygen and a lovely view and slowly take over the pavement, my roots pushing up through the asphalt, scattering the elderly across the cul-de-sac, causing numerous injuries. I have always hated my neighbours. It's beautiful, though, I think, to think that you could become soil, which supports flowers, which feeds some bees, who fertilise some fruit, which someone will leave in their fruit bowl until it's gone all weird, and then those tiny flies are everywhere, and your entire death has been for nothing. Why must we die? 2 points to Helen. Mark, have a listen to this. Don't you know I'm still standing better than I ever did? Looking like a true survivor, feeling like a little kid. And I'm still standing after all this time, picking up the pieces of my life without you on my mind. I'm still standing. Mark, whose castle is still standing?
I wonder if there was a clue in the song.
That very short song? What do you think the clue was?
I think the clue is that was Elton John. Mm. And I guess he had a castle built for his donkeys. And
that's and, right, a perfectly normal donkey castle.
A perfectly normal donkey castle. And he wants to convert it into a recording studio or something, and he can't get planning permission or something. And I mean, I don't know, of all the stories that you hear on the news quiz, these are the sorts of things that really break you. I think this is the sort of thing, that UN report, I think this is the sort of thing it was talking about, where some people have donkey castles and they can't convert them into recording studios, and it just breaks your heart. And you would think in this world of plenty that really surely people ought to be able to get along and do, be able to have, I can't do it. poor.
I know, it's very, it's a difficult one
to talk
about.
It's very moving, but poor Elton John is stuck now with a donkey castle, I suppose.
And nowhere else to build a studio, of course.
Nowhere else to build a recorded studio, because he's got very little space and he's just living on the seventh floor of a tower block. But at least, I suppose, the donkeys, if any stray donkeys do venture near the vicinity, they at least will have a castle, because, you know, what's a donkey if it hasn't got a turret? Barely a donkey at all, is it?
Well, it would lose its sense of self, wouldn't it?
It would. If it couldn't play, if it couldn't play at being a Norman soldier.
It does, yeah. It's very, I mean, it's...
I'm glad, because otherwise it would have looked stupid.
What do you think, Elton John, if he's listened to this, he's probably going, God, the idiots, they think it's a real donkey castle.
And it's amazing to think it's out there, isn't it?
I've seen a photo of it. It is a real donkey castle. It's got those crenellations on it and everything.
Isn't it? It's built in the style of Windsor Castle.
Yeah.
That's the best bit about it. It's in Windsor, and there was a mad quote from Elton John that said, the thing about donkeys, you have to cremate them, because if you bury them, they can explode. And honestly, genuinely, because the bodies fill up with air and come shooting out. Did you know that? Imagine flying donkey kills Queen Mother. He said that in 2000, 2 years later, Queen Mother dead. Coincidence? I think not.
You're like, well, I'll build him a castle. And, like, there's no one in his life who can go, look, Elton, donkeys don't give a shit about castles. Right? Nobody can tell him.
Do you think he's going, it's not for the donkeys, it's for me. I know they don't know what's going on. I think, in a way, it's beautiful, actually. And I think the donkeys do know what's going on.
And role play.
And role play, yeah. They take it, you be David, I'll be Elton, we'll do this. You know, you produce some donkey films, I'll produce some donkey music.
Oh, I thought you meant they were like Game of Thrones or something. why would they be pretending to be Elton John and David Furnish in the castle when they could be Daenerys and possibly the Queen in her dragon form?
I think they're more likely to have seen Elton John and David Furnish than Game of Thrones.
Well,
maybe there's little tiny to scale televisions in the Donkey Castle.
Yeah,
a variety
of.
Should we leave this story for the pub? Yeah.
This is Elton John, who has lost a battle with council bosses to demolish the castle that he built to house his donkeys in order to build a music studio in its place. The castle is built in the style of Windsor Castle, that style being gratuitous waste of money. The castle has a drawbridge, presumably so that the donkeys can draw them up and protect themselves against the invasion of rival forces like Billy Joel's army of penguins or Rod Stewart. I suppose all this means that Elton has just drawn the conclusion to which we all come eventually. If you have a palatial donkey stable in your garden for 26 years and not one single messiah has been born in it, it's time to get the landscapers in. The Donkey Castle actually came about when one of his servants misheard the name of his fifth studio album, Honky Chateau, and took it as an instruction to build one. Two points to Mark. Before we reveal the final scores, has anybody got a cutting they'd like to share? Frankie.
This is from Grace from York. Regarding a pest controller who was tragically killed when dealing with a wasp's nest, speaking after the inquest, his wife said he was the kindest man and would not harm a fly.
Helen.
This is from Tim Coleman in Leeds. It's from the Devon Live website. School dog poo problem is so bad, children are taking the matter into their own hands.
Jen.
This is from Maisie Covington, and it was spotted in her local parish magazine. I'd like to thank all my wonderful family and friends who were in on my birthday celebration secret and came to join us when my amazing husband surprised me at the weekend by taking me up the shard. What an amazing view we all had.
Mark.
I had that one.
Well, you didn't take take it out, you plonker.
No, no, eh?
You're supposed to take the sheet out. That's why I took it, because it was left in. Do you want to read it again? It's funnier the second time.
I might have to make one up.
Yeah, why not? We'll tell you. We'll come up with the name of somebody in
okay,
a place
no, oh,
and
oh,
the publication,
no,
and then you guess the sort of thing they'd say.
This is what. this is from Desmond Whittenstone of Nantwich. Someone sent me something this week, and I'll see if I can get these works. It was a very short one. I can't remember who it was, but they did send me a thing that just said, look at this. If you're ever on the news quiz, use this. It was just an advert that said, penis enlargement can deform body. Desmond Whittenstone will be furious after seeing that.
Well, he's already had quite a weekend. Thank you, and now let's... Thank you, and now let's... come on now, come on, come on, let's be clean. thank you, and now let's take a look at the final score. Jen and Mark have 8, but this week's winners are Frankie and Helen with 9. Before we leave you, here is a sign spotted in a parish church in North Somerset, sent to us by Andy Baker.
We have a key for the toilet available if you're in need. There's a prayer bowl for you to use.
And with that, goodbye.
Taking part in the News Quiz Extra were Frankie Boyle, Helen Lewis, Jen Brister and Mark Steele. In the chair was Miles Jupp, and the news was read by me, Susan Ray. The chair script was written by Jenny LaVille, Sarah Morgan and Benjamin Partridge, with additional material by Catherine Brinkworth, Jules Garnett, Alex Hardy and Kat Sadler. The producer was Sarah Sharp, and it was a BBC Studios production.